I go. Well, now, today is a red letter day. Today is quite a day. This is about the first day I ever brought notes to a lecture. So I want you to mark this down. And what is the date?
April
6th, AD 15. So you want to mark that date down. Ron brought some notes to the lecture. Now, today, you have been hearing a lot about organization and reorganization and reorganization. And I'm about to give you a talk on the new org board for all organizations over the world. And you will find that your notes on this will probably be fairly scrambled. The whole thing will be published in Auditor 8, the whole org board. And there will be HCO policy letter 3 April 65 released, which gives the basic organization in detail. And there's a lot of stuff gone in on this, and actually I've been working on practically nothing else for weeks. Of course, I've been working on everything else for weeks, too. But my concentration has been on this, and it's sort of stopped the... nobody will believe this. People are somewhat alarmed with the number of policy letters coming out and so forth. Those are parts of the new Hatton book. And they're simply being released to get them out so they won't cause randomity, because when we send the new Hatton books off to the printers, we'll have them in 68, 1970. And that a bit of missing data between now and then might prove very catastrophic here and there. So you've noticed that around orgs and so forth, these things are being released as just general non-remimio. Non-remimio means that they're cut on a stencil and just run off, and a few copies are sent to each org. Anyway, you will be seeing a lot of this org board, and I'm merely pointing out to you about this that there is something about it to understand. There's a great deal about it to understand. And the first is that the org board does not change regardless of the size of the organization. It may get longer at the bottom, but it doesn't change in its significant characteristics, departments, divisions, or anything else. They remain constant. And it doesn't matter if it's a class zero org consisting of three guys trying to lift their heads up off the pavement as an organization, or an organization of 200,000 staff members. It would be the same org board. Now, I know that startles you, but I almost told you the real figure, 2 billion. This board has a lot of back history, and it is a refined board, and I may as well tell you the truth here amongst us girls. This is a refined board that I spoke to you about in an earlier lecture of an old galactic civilization. And you say, what's that doing amongst us? Well, we applied Scientology to it and found out why the civilization eventually failed. They lacked a couple of departments, and that was enough to mess it all up. And they only lasted 80 trillion. We'd be going a lot longer than that. So we want to get something substantial. We don't want these temporary fly-by-night affairs, you know. Matter of fact, practically every government of this planet has fallen on its head before it was even heard of. They go up and vanish so quick that history is practically unable to keep track of them. I'll bet you just yesterday, just the other day, 1500 B.C., you cannot tell me the primary civilization which was in existence. That's right, I thought you couldn't. You don't know what government was in power in Europe and the Middle East in 1500 B.C. You see? Just that little tiny, tiny span of time. What is that, 3,500 years? You don't even remember. Temporary. Makeshift. Didn't understand. Nobody'd ever been to school about org boards. Didn't know anything about it. Actually, there have been lots of schools about org boards. They didn't have Scientology, but they did have org boards. And there have been some of the wildest org boards that have ever been invented. Don't consider the United States Army has any org board. It doesn't. Armies don't have org boards. They have command charts. If you want to see the picture of a suppressive person, look at an org board of a military organization. It goes, Commanding General. Adjutants, officers, nobodies. Every place except the Mexican Army. And that has commanding generals. And that's all. It'll be like our city offices using this board for the first time. It'll look like Mexican Army. So everybody be top brass. Two ranks of top brass. Now, our org board is erected to stay there. And therefore, it's been worked out very carefully against various known philosophic principles so that it is itself a philosophic machine. And in a very short time, you're going to see this org board in a comm center where the public is able to walk by it become a jam spot. I can assure you it's going to become a jam spot, and you're going to get little dispatches from communicators saying, can't we put the org board behind the door or something so we can get some work done? No, that isn't the thing to do. It's just make the comm center bigger, elementary, and just put a duplicate board in there the public can stand in front of. Say on it, don't look at this board, look at that one, you know, so as to get them out of the road. Because you're not going to be able to keep people off of this board. That sounds very funny, very funny. How come an organization board could suddenly move up into such prominence? Well, you'll see before this lecture's over. Now, the main thing to know about these things is a command chart is only one tiny two-bit little function. That's a minor function of an organization chart. Because an organization chart must take care of function. And it must take care of the activity. And it must take care of what happens. And you look on an Army's organization board and you don't find any place to refer a lost battle. Well, that's pretty interesting. What do you do with lost battles? I can just see an Army signalman trying to fought a lost battle someplace in an Army org board. He's trying to look for the guy's basket. Where do we send this lost battle? Now let me tell you why they fail. This is the principle. And this is a principle of this universe. If the function is not expressed, it will be worn unknowingly by everybody. And you can write that down in letters of fire right on the frontal structure where it comes to organizations, right on the front of your skull so you can look at it as a thing. Write it backwards, of course, so that you can look at it properly. The function that isn't expressed is worn by everybody. This, therefore, becomes very important when I say, where do you put the lost battle? Well, just that all by itself, and that's a very minor point, would, of course, eventually defeat the organization with such a board. Because its decay is on automatic. But, of course, man's reactive bank, being the way man's reactive bank is, of course he'd invent such an org board. Now, where you have, then, one of these org boards, you have a frailty that goes along, which is almost the same order of magnitude as what I just told you. The function which isn't expressed on the org board is worn by everyone unknowingly. See? And you can make a note of that because that's very important. Is the other monitoring function which gives us bureaucracies. And that is, when you put a box on an org board, it will be filled.
And that is at war with the other function. Now, let's look at these two contradictory data, and they're almost of comparable magnitude. If we don't express the function on the org board, it will be worn unknowingly by everyone. And the other datum, if you put a box, a square, or a function on an org board, they will assign people to it. Inevitably and invariably, they will find this to be the case. Those two things, then, are at war and have not been solved by organizations of the past. So in the effort to stay within the realm of possibility with regard to personnel, economic possibility, population possibilities, and so forth, within that realm, then they drop functions off the org board. Because they can't have an organization that big. Because this, again, is a hidden datum that people will fill the box. They'll put somebody in that box. You got a box there, it says adjutant's boot shiner. Well, you'll find an adjutant's boot shiner show up. He may be totally unnecessary. Maybe adjutants have ceased to wear boots. But he'll be there. And if they've neglected to take mules off of the U.S. Army charts, you're going to find mules and mule helpers and mule holders and mule couriers. And I'll bet you there's some place in the United States Army right now that's just got tons of mules. I'll just bet you. And I'll bet you in reforming the cavalry charts, when they turned them over to mechanized, people who like animals don't like machines, so they turned over the cavalry and mechanized it, you see? On the theory that cavalry goes across countryside or something. But they forgot to take the spurs off the officers. Don't you see? So, therefore, I know definitely that they forgot to take some spots out of their org boards. And you're going to find some mighty peculiar things if you went sneaking around a cavalry regiment today. They're mechanized. They're in tanks, you know, and they got motorcycles and armored cars and jeeps and all that sort of thing. Officers still wearing spurs. They sure raised the devil with tank upholstery, too. But if you looked around there, you would see some peculiar things. And if you went and looked at their org board, why, it isn't there. Now, if there no tank repairmen or anything like that were provided for, you wouldn't find them there. Now, oddly enough, man, when he works as a team, must have policy, or he is not a team. He cannot work as a team without policy. So all he works as is a bunch of individuals. Even bad policy, you see, will at least make a team out of him. Do you follow? It isn't whether the policy is bad or good. It's does it exist and is it followed? Fortunately, I don't write policy on the basis any old policy is better than no policy. But it so happens, there'll be somebody cursing his head, unable to get this through his skull at some time or another, probably going to remember this line on the tape and hold it up to me. You probably better cut it out. But that's true. Any policy is better than no policy because that is what makes the team. It's simply the agreement. It's the extant agreement. And if there isn't an extant agreement, then you have individualized action. When you get individualized action, even though this is occasionally very spectacular and very successful, which is, hangs the auditor in a win, you see, and then makes him lose afterwards, this very spectacular individualization of action within the rest of the team, weirdly enough, even though it occasionally wins a battle, in actual fact does more harm than good. Because it sets an example of breaking policy, which then breaks up the team. The worst team you ever wanted to see is one composed of all stars taken at random as the starring players with spectacular individualities from each of the winning teams of a country. I don't care what game you're playing. If you want a really stinking team, get those boys. because they're running according to the different policies of their different coaches, don't you see? And they are already, by all-star players, pre-selected as doing something that was very noticeable, which means they didn't even follow their own team policy. So now you group all these fellows together in a mess, and each one is magnificent and a collective mess, and they probably could be licked by any little batch of high school kids on the same game who were welded together by policy. When Bill does that, I do this. That's it. That's play 64. What's play 64? Well, when Bill does that, I do this, and then Joe does that. That's just policy. Now, you see, if they were facing some individuals who were very, very good individually, and those individuals they were facing had no policy, do you see that these three guys on the organized team could easily defeat the other team because they're defeating, they're actually in basketball, be five men against one, not a team. In other words, each member of an unorganized team is standing naked and alone. And so any small group, no matter how small, as long as it's more numerous than the one, can rather easily defeat one. So we in Scientology, compared to the world's population, are a relatively small group. We tend to be a lot of ruddy individualists, which is fine in our private life. But our organizational actions must be coordinated. And if we knitted together our organizational actions and our functions across the world, and we had a good similarity of action, good duplication from organization to organization, and then we grooved this in and put this together very nicely, who else on this planet is following policy? Nobody. Even the commies, who are the closest to organized people, have such rifts about policy that nobody knows whether to follow Lenin's policy or Stalin's policy or Khrushchev's policy or the new coexistence policy, see, or the old revolutionary policy, whatever that was. And you probably not realize that there are about, well, I know myself of three or four brands of communism, and therefore I would say there are probably 300 or 400. You see, because I'm not a, to use a difficult word, a buff on the subject, you know. You ever hear of a fire buff or a police buff? He's the fellow, whenever he hears the police sirens, goes out and jumps in his car, you know, and follows the police car. Or he's the fellow that follows the fire engines to the fire. He's the railroad buff. Why, he's always down looking for old steam engines and so forth, and he's asking for a ride on a cowcatcher or something like that. Buff. I'm not a communist buff. I don't follow him up very much because it won't be necessary. See? I just don't like to become a buff to an impermanent fixture. There's no future in it. And they're really not long for this world. Why? Well, there's two good reasons why. One, they themselves aren't that good. They're a temporary Earth civilization. One of these temporary things that goes away in what? Flicker of an eye and they're gone, see? Up 1 minute, down the next, disappear, down the drain type of operation. So they couldn't be going very long. And their duration alone doesn't make them very worthy as an opponent. They wouldn't be. Now you say, what do you mean duration? They wouldn't be here long. They'd be here long enough. Well, maybe they'd be here long enough for atomic fission. But we're working on that one too. Now the point I'm trying to make out is that if you were better organized, then organizations were better organized, you wouldn't have to do anything spectacular about the other organizations. Do you follow? This will not then engage you in a war with the other organizations. We don't want a war with these organizations. And oddly enough, I have traced every single blow-up we've had back to a wild departure from policy. Very simple primary known policy. Melbourne blew up on the refund policy. They just didn't follow any part of the refund policy. That's rather incredible. Our policy is when somebody isn't satisfied and so forth and wants his money back, we promptly give him his money back. We also tell him, well, you're through with Scientology, but that has nothing more to do with it. We don't want to stand around taking his money and giving it back and taking his money and giving it back. The devil with that's too hard on the accounts department. So we just say, all right, you've had it, there's your money, bye-bye. And that's been policy since heck was a pup. And Melbourne didn't give the man his money back. No. And when they did give him his money back, they didn't follow the rest of the policy. Then you get a quit claim from him. So he turned right around and sued him. They gave his money back and he sued him. Pure idiocy. Then Melbourne's rather expert at departing from policy, and you needn't cut that off of tape. That's where they come a cropper, you see. They are not part of the team, and you will find all the symptoms of individuation present, which is they yammer at the other teams. See? They cuss the other teams out. They're always getting ARC broke about the other teams, you see. And they just individuate more and more and more and follow policy less and less and less, and all of a sudden they aren't there anymore unless somebody intervenes with heavy cavalry. Now, if we're going to make our forward progress, we have a lot of good organizations through the world, of which Melbourne is one of them now. I have now acted. The situation is that these are placed in rather strategic areas. They're placed in strategic areas to spread a sphere of influence. And when those spheres of influence meet on their own borders, we don't want them to be different and create a ridge. We want them just to flow smoothly out and meet. You follow? It's all rigged to do so. Now, therefore, if we are a good team, and if we watch our individual cases, and we come right on up the line as people, as beings, and we also are part of the team, then we won't get into all the trouble we got into as roaring, screaming individuals way back on the track. In other words, we can make it all the way because we've kept order all the way. Right now, we could turn people loose. It used to dismay me. I've already faced this problem. It used to dismay me when I would clean somebody up as a case, and then he'd get into busy activity of some kind or another and go tearing off in a big busyness and not do anything for the forward motion. Because normally he would go out there and he would go for a while and he'd be all right, but after a while, why, he'd sort of cave in. Loneliness and other things, you see. This was a bum show. So obviously, then, we weren't making our way with his case. So we find out that case stability depends upon the smooth organization of individuals. See? Sensible as that. And then we'd be able to make it all the way. And without an organizational shove back of that, then the guy goes up. And I don't care whether it's 1,000 years, I don't care whether it's 10 years, 1,000 years, or 10 billion years, why, there he is in the theta trap. Or there he is going downhill again. Or there he is with all this stuff plastered all over his face and he can't figure out what it is. And he's now forgotten how to run 8C or touch assist. You see? It'd be a temporary affair. And like an Earth government, wouldn't be worth doing. Now, it isn't that anybody is trying to weld everybody together to the end of time. But I should say offhand that every person and being and so on who is going up with Scientology ought to take Scientology up with him. Seems only fair. And then you'll find things will work out fairly smoothly and very easily. Now, what do you fall back on when you come a cropper all by yourself out in the far reaches of this particular planet? What do you fall back on? You fall back on an organization. You fall back on me. How could I be there at all if there wasn't an organization to take care of the action? Do you see? So an organization is not a necessary evil or not some reason why and so forth. The organization is there to serve Scientologists and to handle the thing and the public and spread it out and so forth. There's lots of reasons why it's there, but this isn't electron purposes. But remember that it is a coordinated activity, and therefore it must be very close to flawless. Because once you put one of these things in brass and start it, you know, you put it in concrete and you start it rolling, if it's almost right, you had it. Because it will become an all-devouring monster and fail by the germs of its own destruction. And the thing that destroys almost any organism is its own germs. It's the things it laid in. It's the things you did, not what were done to you. The only way you can come down is for having made a mistake yourself. It must always be that prior mistake. Sometimes it's very slight. Sometimes you couldn't possibly have hoped to have predicted the action would go the way it went. But it did go in some fantastic tangent to the way you expected it to go from that particular point, and you had made a mistake, and there one starts down. You make enough of those things and you're really going down. But it takes quite a few. What's interesting is there's an organization watching its general income curve go down, doesn't realize when I look at it, I am not looking for a thing that is making it go down. I'm looking for the 100,000. I'm looking for the gross errors, but the lots of them. They're not really ever composed of one major error, one howling major error. That if you go around looking for that, you make the same mistake that has been made by every philosopher that I have ever read. He's made a mistake. It's contained on this chart. And what's contained is this. He says, what you must have is understanding. What you must have is understanding, says the old philosopher. Now, please, 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 please. What you must have is understanding. Boy, that is an error that I myself fell into and have carried on for a very long time. Until I was drawing up this org board the other day and recognized the flaw. It's understandings. It's plural. It's a sort of a trick. You look at something and you're trying to understand this thing. You're looking for one big thing to understand. And it isn't composed of one big thing to understand. It's got about 15 or 20 little ones. That's the biggest, probably the biggest single bug there is in philosophy anywhere. The philosophers looked for understanding. They looked for an understanding. I can tell you quite frankly, there's 265 times 6 separate dynamic urges in man. Separate, basic, principal dynamic urges in man. 265 times 6. And there's 265 times 6 times 18. Separate causations. Now, the big understanding there is that they exist. And the other understanding is it was an effort to make them so numerous that nobody could embrace them. Well, all right, let's get to the next point on this org board rather slippily and rapidly. I hope I've made my point that there is some necessity for organizational action. It must be smooth, there must be policy. The next point is that it must be comprehensible. It's got to be knowable. If there were no system by which it went together, it would put everyone who read it on a memory basis. If it didn't cross-categorize, and if it didn't do various things, if you couldn't classify various types of communication, various types of duties or functions, and so on, it'd just become a madhouse. It'd be chaos itself. So the org board must express the functions, duties, sequences of action, and authorities. And boy, that's a lot to express. On a two-dimensional board, you're going to express the potential duties, well, a couple of thousand staff members, and bring it down to one staff member. And the one staff member is not going to be any different than the 2,000. 200,000, 2 million, 200 million, 2 billion staff members. What are we looking at? Boy, that's a philosophic conundrum, isn't it? Enough to give you a headache to think of it. How are you going to take an organization that would accommodate and define and delineate the duties? This was the principle on which I operated. Of 2 billion staff members and reduce it down to one staff member. Well, actually, when I first started out, it would go up to about 100 staff members. You could get it as big as 100 before you needed a brand new org board. And that means the organization would have to be torn apart and thrown away. Or you could bring it down to 3. And that's as low as you could get it. You could only get it to 3. And I was stuck between 3 and 100, or thereabouts. And I said, that isn't good enough. And I started cracking me brains, trying to figure out, might as well crack my brains, I don't want to get damaged myself. So I set myself the artificial problem of making it so that it would go up to 2 billion. This is totally just theoretical, just so I'd have a zoom figure, you know, big. And down to one person. And that was the span of action. Duty, function, organization, and form. Well, that's why you're going to see people looking at this org board and jamming up things and so forth. Because, hold your hat, it gives the cycle of raw meat to OT. It gives the cycle of actions a person would undertake from the public. So it became a public org board, too, because the public looking at it enters from the left and proceeds straight on through to the right. That's all. And it must take care of him properly all the way along the way. It must therefore be the way. It must therefore be the route. Now, following the laws and principles of how you make a channel and what you do to keep the channel rolling and keep an impulse on the channel, you must, of course, have an impulse into the channel. The edges of the channel must be held firm. The barriers in the channel must be removed. The noncompliance of forwardings in the channel have to be taken care of. And the distractions must be removed from the borders of the channel. And there must be some place for something going down the channel to arrive at. Must be a place where it starts from and a place for it to arrive at. And we have defined life, and life without that channel won't exist. That's livingness. Livingness is going along a certain course, impelled by a purpose and with some place to arrive. It consists mostly of removing the barriers in the channel, holding the edges firm, ignoring the distractions, and reinforcing and re-impelling one's progress along the channel. That's life. And that's the Sorg board. It's dreamed up with malice aforethought to put somebody on it and shove him straight through. It's rigged. It's rigged to remove the distractions, reinforce the edges, pick up the barriers, take care of the noncompliance, re-impulse any particle on the line with a place for it to go. It does all these things. Now, not only that, it gives you all the levels that will now exist for the gradation program. All the levels for the gradation program. And this is where Clear fell out of the hamper suddenly after all these years. Suddenly took a look at it and found exactly where Clear fitted. Clear is a sort of a baby OT. He hadn't learned to walk yet. But frankly, there's nothing to erase between Clear and OT except the physical universe. His next bank, of course, is the physical universe. I don't think he's going to go around and erase that in a hurry. But he could go before it or go after it, couldn't he? He wouldn't have to erase it. But that's Clear. Clear is a baby OT. So that occurs on the board. Well, you take a baby, he's in beautiful condition, but he sure as hell can't walk. You ever notice? You follow. He clears a bell, you know. I mean, you could ring him and he'd gong for hours. But beautiful condition. He's got lots of experience, if he could only call on it. I ran into this head on myself. I don't know if you've read the bulletin yet or not. Is it in your hands? Yeah, all right. I don't know what you thought about that. Gave you a terrible shock, I imagine. But a release, we've been looking at release for a long time. It's very funny. I've never been able to get anybody to check out a release or a clear. You know, big arguments about a release. There's only one question they had to ask, but they never seemed to be able to say that anybody was really a release. And big arguments ensued about clear. Well, of course, I had to be within shooting range of this exact position on the forward travel and so forth before I could suddenly say, ah, for God's sakes. Ah, what the devil. You know, I got all the right answers, and we got the right answers all the way to the top. That's what's so funny, you know. 1952 Philadelphia lectures, you know. It was very funny. They tell you all about an OT. Creation of Human Ability, published here in England ages ago, got the steps in it that you now undertake. Of course, you can't take those steps with a reactive bank in your road because it reactivates the bank and the bank shoves you back down again. It's wild business. Isn't it? So there it was, and I looked it right. So I decided, well, Ronnie, I said, the only thing you can do is just confess. Fess up to it. All right, that's the way it is. Because we leave it to the universities to make popularity with data. And we ourselves fare best when we simply tell what we know and we know it. And this is a case in point. That's one of these new jet fighters they're practicing. Well, we haven't got any OTs in the class to go up and give him ID on land, so we have a lot. So these points have to show up on this board. They have to be taken care of on this board, because this board isn't taking care of one kind of being. It isn't taking care of Thetan Wog class spun in X2, see? Be a son of a gun if the board isn't taking care of all of these types of beings. And there are different types of beings as they go on up the line, don't you see? They act differently and they'll behave differently. So therefore, we had to move up in the direction of accommodating this fact And so the easiest way to do that and so forth was simply to express the various stages on the org board itself and match them to the departments of the org board. We find each department at the org board expresses one of these conditions. Now, I knew nobody else would want to take the original basic point on the horizontal line, so I did. And that's the first organization that we ever had in Scientology, and that was the Office of L. Ron Hubbard, and that's Department 1. You see, that's the Office of L. Ron Hubbard. That's the old Phoenix, Arizona office I first put together and eventually became HASI. Well, what's more elementary than that? And I tried to figure out what else would go on this. I knew there was something a bit odd here. And so on, I suddenly realized we'd forgotten a piece of our own track. And in Scientology track. And that was the first organization of Scientology. And strangely enough, it is still functioning. It functions just exactly like that. And when we tried to straighten out St. Hill here the other day, we found out that the only things wrong, I found out the only things going wrong here in my perimeter is that the lines which are always in on the Office of L. Ron Hubbard never had been connected at St. Hill. But they were trying to go in all the time, but nobody had connected them up. There's always an LRH communicator. And he normally, he has lots of multitudinous duties of one kind or another. And such a person has a lot of things to do. And this person has, he handles signatures for one thing, and authorities and signatures. And you'll see these things coming in, and they're typed up in various parts of the organization. They're scattered all over the organization. People wonder, well, how long am I going to have this line? You know, it doesn't seem to belong. Well, it belongs in the Office of L. Ron Hubbard, of course. It's a letter written up for my signature, or it's a certificate for my signature, or it's something else for my signature. That's just one of these many functions. There are a whole bunch of these little things. There is, where is my file of policy letters, don't you see? There's that kind of a function. There's all kinds of little functions of this particular character that doing without them and scattering them around the organization elsewhere winds everybody kind of up in the soup. Now, therefore, that stuff is all corralled, and that's under the first department. But the main thing to know about the first department is that it is an issuance of conditions. We have some conditions now which are hung around people's heads because for this excellent reason that if they exceed a condition, if they try to be in one condition when they're in another condition, I'll give you an idea. They try to be in a condition of emergency when they're in a condition, let us say, of affluence. You know, they got lots of money, and they try to act like they're in a condition of emergency. They will very shortly be in a condition of emergency. Do you see? And reversely, weirdly enough, if they try to be in a condition of affluence while they're in a condition of emergency, boy, will they be in a condition of emergency. I found a whole bunch of formulas here, one kind or another, which regulate the steps which should be taken. These are basic policy. They regulate the steps should be taken for any given condition of an organization or its department. So the name of that area is conditions. And that's the point of conditions. And that announces conditions. But, of course, if you hubs and jobs in this around, when somebody comes in, what does he tell you about? He tells you about conditions. He tells you about his conditions, or he tells you about the conditions of the world. He's always got a condition in mind. That's what lies from there off the board into raw meat, you see. You have the first cognition is that there is a condition.